Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Today we have a special episode with Kenny Hsu, the author of An Inconvenience Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence, and The Fight for Meritocracy. Over the last, year and a half, the phrase Stop Asian Hate has been posted everywhere. Kenny, we wanted to have you on because you're our only Asian friend here to kind of break it down and then break down what your book is about and the importance of it in today's society. As a couple of white guys up here, we really, can't answer the questions. So thank you for joining us today.
No, I appreciate being on. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start from the top here. What made you want to write this book in the first place?
Seeing the left's diversity and inclusion and tolerance, seeing the hypocrisy on that when it comes to Asian Americans. Of course, they love to preach tolerance and diversity, and social justice and racial justice is now the new term. Mm-hmm. But they're actually willing to get rid of or subordinate other races in order to get what they want. So you have this new ideology, like, for example, in my book, I talk about Harvard's admissions process, which is like now a big topic in the nation, and how Harvard, since they want more Black applicants, they want more Hispanic applicants, they don't want more Asian or white applicants, they actually suppress Asian American admissions in their schools. An Asian has to score 440 points higher on the SAT to have the same chance of admission as a Black person. And Asians are kept to roughly half of the school if they were admitted just based on merit. So this is a kind of this is the progression of a new ideology that is pretty much taking over America today. You could call it wokeness. You could call it critical race theory. You could call it identity politics. I just prefer calling it discrimination and elite discrimination. And so this is why I wrote my book, An Inconvenient Minority, to really expose what's going on at that level.
Well, look, I have a theory on this as far as why the Asian community in general is pushed down like you were talking about by the left, and it's simply a numbers game. I don't think Asians make up enough of the population to affect a vote. Therefore, they will always continue to get pushed down, like you said, for Blacks or Latinos, simply because they can win elections on that. Do you discuss that in the book at all?
Well, it's not just that, because the left, for example, loves to protect Palestinian immigrants who make up a much smaller percentage than Asian immigrants do, or Chinese American or Korean American or anything like that. So it's not just about population. It's also about perceived status, because the left wants to play the role of we are for the oppressed, and Asians in their eyes are not oppressed enough. Why? Because they are, they come to this country and they work hard. And as a result of that, they're able to achieve higher socioeconomic incomes, higher educational attainment than the average American. So Asian Americans are both a smaller minority and they're a minority that the left simply perceives as too privileged for them to care about.
That's hilarious. That's a minority is too privileged. I know what you're talking about, and I mean, shit, I've said it on the show before, like numerous times. I don't know why we just can't admit what certain races are good at and what they're not good at. And you know, I'd said this on the show that look, I will only trust my life in the hands of an Asian doctor or something like that. I've said it a million times, or an Indian. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Look, I went to college, went to grad school, all that other stuff, right? Asians were simply just smarter than me. There's nothing I could do about it. But that's what you should want in the country, because it's going to bolster everything across the board. And you want people in here who are actually contributing and able to do some of these other jobs. Why don't you want the smartest? Why don't you want the best? Why does race even factor into it when you're just looking for the best job opportunities and the best people to put in those jobs?
Because to some, particularly among elite liberals, Asian Americans represent competition. That's why. You know, if you're an elite liberal and you live in, you know, New York, San Francisco, high achieving, highly progressive areas, right? And you see that your kid, who is not as academically gifted, is being outcompeted by guys named like Wong and guys named Chu or Chang.
Yep.
You know, you get resentment, you know, you get jealous of these people. And in my book, An Inconvenient Minority, I explore this, right? Because, you know, people are people, right? And people will resent other people who look different, you know, for various reasons. Obviously, we've seen this in our country in the past, but now we're seeing it in supposedly one of the supposedly most tolerant people groups in American life, which is elite liberals, the people who have the hate is no home here signs, are actually trying to justify Asian discrimination because it helps their kid win the competition for these scarce, gifted, and talented school spots and these scarce elite college admission spots.
Yeah. And look, were you the one that broke that Harvard story as far as, you know, how they were letting in Harvard admissions? And there was a certain type of Asian that they had described in an email that they would rather prefer, who they were more social. What was it? Mom bear or cub bear or something like that?
I'm not sure if I broke that story, but I did break the story. Or I've been talking about this story a lot, where Harvard rates Asian Americans the lowest on personality.
That's it.
To justify their discrimination against Asian Americans. They actually rate Asians lowest on personality, even though they have the highest academic scores and the highest extracurricular scores. And the reason why they do that, you take a look at the objective evidence, and there's no objective evidence to suggest that that's the case. Asians do just as well as whites on alumni interviews, nearly as well as whites on teacher recommendations, but you see Asians below whites and blacks and Hispanics in the racial hierarchy on personality. So you can't really explain that except with, you know, this racial stereotyping that Harvard admissions officers bring.
Got it. So when they're in there and they're going through the interview process, are they filling out these forms that say, all right, so-and-so, kind of quiet, not very social. We don't give a shit about the grades.
Yeah. Well, so if you're an Asian, it's funny, you can have the same exact application, mm-hmm. an Asian student and a black student, and you change nothing about the application except for the race. And then a Harvard admissions officer will look at the Asian student's application, you know, perfect SAT scores, amazing grades, great essay, nails the teacher recommendations. And he looks at this Asian, he's like, oh, we have so many of them already. Or he's just like a standard strong person. That's the term they use, standard strong. It means good, but not good enough. And he's just like, oh, they're overachieving. Probably his parents made him do it, that kind of thing. He looks at the same application, could be a black student. And he says, oh my gosh, this is the best thing since sliced bread. Let's let him in and everything like that, celebrate this person. And so it just, the stories, the story that they tell, the admissions officers tell themselves, changes just because you switch one race to another.
Oh, 100%. I went through it growing up. My best friend. My best friend was black. We both applied to the same college. He had a full point lower in GPA than me. Everything else was, and this was a state school, it was University of Georgia. It wasn't like we were trying to get into Harvard. I'm not that goddamn smart. He ended up getting in. I did not. The only thing that was different on our applications was race, and we were in the same class and everything else. We kind of laughed it off because I'd sent in a bunch of applications to other schools. However, in the same state of Georgia, recently, maybe within the last 2 to 3 years, there was a white student who had checked the wrong box. And then when she got to school there, and they, you know, she wasn't black, they threw her out of college. And it was based on that. Their family sued and won a bunch of money off of it. So it is possible. And I wonder if that might be the move for the future, because as these boxes are coming in for, you know, I've got two kids now. You can check off what their gender is, or you don't have to say anything anymore. You can check off what their race is, or you can say now in the box, I would prefer not to say. I think we're sort of headed towards that, because like you said, if you're just looking at it from a race perspective, yes, that's going to change the outcome of who gets in and why. What do you think is going to happen with that as far as schooling goes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd like to say that you can just uncheck an Asian box and then you'll be okay. But you can't do that because Harvard knows who you are anyway. They have access to all of this data mining, consulting services. They know who you are. They know your profile. They're going to judge you on it whether you like it or not. This is data mining without your consent that Harvard brings out. You know, they will know based on student search, and the College Board now has that resource now available to other schools. So now all of these schools are going to do this. They're going to data mine you and judge you based on your background without you giving them consent. So unfortunately, I'd like to say that unchecking an Asian race and maybe like changing your name would help, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't, because they're going to find out who you are anyway. That's just the age we live in.
Man, I didn't know that. I didn't know even the colleges are mining for data these days. That seems like it's all of it. That's we're basically just down to every company, corporation. How much data can we actually mine from you to either sell you shit or try to get the most amount of money out of you?
Yeah, back in the 90s, the Ivy Leagues actually lost a lawsuit where they were accused of colluding colluding for the purposes of scholarship money. So what happened was, if you were, they wanted to make sure that they wouldn't outcompete each other on scholarships. So if a school offered you, you know, $20,000 in scholarships, they wanted to make sure that another Ivy League wouldn't also offer you like $25,000 or $30,000 in scholarships, because that would up the amount of money they would have to offer. So they colluded to make sure that everybody was only offering scholarships to, or only one school was offering scholarships to this person, so that they could basically keep the most money. And that was ruled illegal. So, I mean, you don't think the shady things are going on in the college admissions process? I mean, this stuff has been happening for a while.
Yeah, I knew it. You know, and with the Aunt Becky stuff, obviously, it was further proof whether, you know, you could buy your kids in and all that other stuff. I knew it, just not to an extreme level of mining for data and things like that. What is your background originally? Were you born in the United States?
I was born in Maryland, yeah.
Okay. And what about your family? How did they come over to the United States?
Well, mom and dad were immigrants from China. They're entrepreneurs. My dad started his own business. It was doing well, and then the Great Recession hit, and so he had to go back to unfortunately his business folded, so he had to go back to a corporate job. Moved me up to New Jersey when I was about 14 years old. And I lived in the Princeton area. So I lived around a lot of kind of elite, ambitious kids who wanted to be, you know, who wanted to go to these Ivy League colleges, you know, whose parents were obsessed with it, There was a kid that was named Harvard at my school. There was a guy who whose parents enrolled him in squash because squash is one of those sports that you could get recruited to elite colleges to with less competition. So I knew the mindset. And I'm not, you know, this book, my book, An Inconvenient Minority. I attack Harvard, which deserves to be attacked thoroughly, mm-hmm. what they do. But I also reveal these emotions, these truths about what happens playing the game in a distorted system, right? In a distorted system. And this is the reality of America, what America's going towards now. It's not just Harvard, it's not just the Ivy Leagues, but when people start treating and start enforcing equity standards where they have to admit certain people of a certain race, you get these distorted incentives where people are now more inclined to play a victimhood game, to play a victimhood narrative instead of just trying hard and being excellent. And I think that's the real fear in my mind for the next generation.
Same, man. If you can find an excuse for something to get your way, that is what's going to happen. So instead of just working hard and outworking everyone, if you can identify as something or someone or, you know, just to get an edge, I think that's what's going to happen. But the problem is it's going to divide us even further, yeah. as a nation. It's going to cause, the issues that we're seeing going on today. And it's, you're not getting the best people. That's what pisses me off the most.
Yeah.
Is you're not getting the most talented person. Again, throw race out the window. Let's just go with the talent and the talent at hand and then try to develop that. If you're not good enough, tell them at a younger age you're not good enough to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Athletics does it all the time. That's the one thing where, look, it is the most talented wins. Congratulations. You're getting the most talent on the court. There is no... we've got to have a certain number of this person from this race or background or whatever. No, I don't understand why every job, college and everything else, isn't treated like that. Of talent, grades, the best of the best win. And if you're not, I apologize, that's not going to happen to you.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that we're talking about sports now, because I agree, it's the place where meritocracy should endure, where you should be treated on your merit. But you look at the coverage of the Olympics and more recently of sports just in general. And the biggest stories now are not of people winning. They're of people quitting. They're people dropping out, you know?
Yeah.
And I say that with no disrespect to Simone Biles, who is a genuinely great gymnast. But if you decide, hey, you're going to quit the Tokyo Olympics for one reason or another, okay, fine. It's your decision. Let's move on and let's talk about somebody else, because this is, you don't deserve that spotlight at that point. Somebody else does, you know? And so, but you can see the way the media and journalism is sort of, they're piling on stories that are not about genuine merit or not about excellence, but really about stories about playing a different sort of game.
Yeah, and it's funny you brought up Simone Biles. I'm not sure if you heard, as of an hour ago, she is actually going to compete in the final events, which is the balance beam. I believe it's either tonight or tomorrow. Hot Bob, you can look that up and see what it is. But before we were going on air, all of us were discussing with the producers and everything, what's going to happen either way and what that narrative is going to be for Simone Biles, right? Because it was like you said, the spotlight is already being sucked up by her. Every other girl that is filled in has won medals, and they've done great. Like seeing old Suni Lee crushed it, best gymnast in the world. Congratulations to her. And it's like, but we're still talking about Simone Biles. Let's talk about the person who actually won is the best gymnast in the world. The rest of the team also got medals, including just recently, spoiler alert, cover your ears if you don't want to hear it. Jade also won the gold medal today. So Simone Biles is going to be in the balance beam. If she wins, then it's going to be this triumphant comeback story of she was able to overcome mental illness and everything else and be the GOATs and the greatest of all time. If she loses, she's setting herself up for, well, you know, she tried and that's all we can ask for and blah, blah, blah. But again, that's going to take up the spotlight from the rest of all, what all of these girls have accomplished in the Olympics so far.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, every elite athlete knows that every game is a different game, that every Olympics, a winner at a 2016 Olympic Games does not make a winner at the 2020 Olympic Games. We all know that. People get injured, people quit, people lose out for various things. It's just the unfair reality of life. You know, Tom Brady got his first start after his starting quarterback got hurt. It's not about, you know, what opportunities. I mean, it's not about it's ultimately about what you make of the opportunity that you have,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that is an aspect that we should concentrate on. So, you know, I'm wishing her all the best. You know, I'm wishing that she does well and that she does ascend to that throne again. But we should not let these stories of people missing out or quitting or just or being distracted or in other senses distract from stories of true excellence.
Yeah, I 100% agree. We'll see what happens tonight and or tomorrow. Bob, when is it? Do you know? So 5 minutes ago when I asked you, just decided not to, or?
yeah, pretty much. She wow. is. I didn't think you were serious. I think it's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so look, we'll have our answer tomorrow because God bless. If it does, we host a huge sports show as well. Kenny, so that's we'll be discussing it this afternoon. But if she were to win, it will be just absolutely wall-to-wall news coverage on every single network, and it'll be crazy. Look, for the story, I'm looking forward to it. We'll find out what happens. With you personally, where did you end up going to college?
I went to Davidson College. I was a math major.
Yeah, so you went to old Steph Curry's college.
Yeah, that's right. He was there a couple times.
Does everybody call it that? Everybody calls Davidson Steph Curry. Oh, yeah, Steph Curry. They don't know anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Davidson. Either they don't hear about it or they're like, oh, that's Steph Curry's college.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
Were your parents pissed off that you didn't go to Harvard?
No. They didn't really care. This was not something that bothered. The funny thing about this book was that it's something that I wasn't as bothered by, you know, with my Ivy League rejection from Princeton or whatever. It's not something that I was as bothered by until I saw this ideology spread, right? Until mm-hmm. I saw it go past colleges. Now it's in the public school system, you know, Thomas Jefferson High School, number one high school for science and mathematics in Fairfax, Virginia. Just it used to be 70% Asian. They just made a proposal where they said we need to turn it into a merit lottery for diversity. And as a result, the Asian population went down like 50% at Thomas Jefferson. And so you saw this attack on excellence. You know, whether it's Asian Americans or anybody, but you see this attack on excellence that is spreading throughout this entire country, that I became passionate about this issue. And I saw Harvard at the crux of it. The Harvard case, which is now being negotiated by the Supreme Court, Asian Americans are now suing Harvard for discriminating against them.
Mm-hmm.
That case has the potential to really reverse and really decide the entire thing about what's going on in this industry today.
How far away is that out in the Supreme Court? Because usually those things take a while.
Yeah, it's going to be out in October, hopefully.
Is it really?
Hopefully they'll take up the case in October. Yeah, right now they're soliciting the Biden administration's opinion on the case, and very likely Biden's going to support Harvard and Harvard's stance. And Harvard's stance, by the way, is we're only doing it because we want a diverse student body. That's what they said. So they're discriminating. They're okay. It raises this interesting tension, right? Because at what point is it okay to discriminate against the most meritorious in order to achieve so-called racial diversity?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, we always side on the We always side for talent here. Again, I just don't give a shit about race. Just put the most talented people where they should be. And that's how America can be the strongest it can possibly be. If you have the best people working the best possible jobs, going to the best schools and everything else. If you weren't good enough to make it, sorry, you just weren't good enough to make it. I want to kind of touch on the Stop Asian Hate thing. That shooting that was down in Georgia. I grew up in Georgia. I know that area very well. What did you think of that and the Stop Asian Hate movement that started after that?
The shooting itself was obviously very tragic, and they still haven't really determined a racial motivation yet. Last time I checked, because he shot six Asian women, but he shot a white woman and he shot a Hispanic woman as well. Mm-hmm. And it may just happen to be that the women that he didn't want there, you know, were of a certain race, but it may have been a racist intent. Like I can totally concede that if the facts prove it. But the issue that I have is the corresponding attempts to paint Asians as a victim of white supremacy, because of this shooting, because the shooter was white and the majority of the victims were Asian. It's not true, because even if we're going to look at Asians being attacked, even if that was the metric for everything that we're talking about with race and Asians and victimhood and white supremacy, you know, the plurality, 28% of the people, of the perpetrators of violence against Asians, were Black Americans, 25% were white Americans, the rest were other colors. You know, so this is not a crime of white supremacy against Asian Americans. Asian Americans have succeeded a lot in this country. And they've, by the way, so have people of every other race. Mm-hmm. So have many Black Americans, so have many Latino Americans. And are there people in poverty? Yeah, but there are people in poverty with Asians too. But Asians have succeeded in this country and have immigrated to this country with basically nothing, and in one generation are able to put their kids through college. That is a testament to the American success story. So I really think that positioning Asians and trying to get them to vote as an identity block against white supremacy is the wrong move and ultimately harmful to the Asian American community.
Yeah, I agree, because I live not far from where that happened. And I said this on air too. I don't think it was that he hated Asians. Probably loved him a little too much and just couldn't afford to go there anymore. For real. They were all that. I know that area very well. Those are all massage parlors where, you know, typically you're paying a little extra for a little wink, wink there. Uh-huh. But, you know, I didn't see it as necessarily a hate crime versus like a lonely kid who just couldn't fucking get it together. And then went in there and shot up the place. And like you said, I think there was either one or two white people killed in that, and then a Latino. I don't know that race necessarily was the factor there, but that's the way it was painted in the media. And, you know, instantly it shot out the Stop Asian Hate, and that went around for a long time. And it seemed like a convenient narrative at the time for what was going on, but there was not necessarily an explanation for what really were the facts of the case, which you were just talking about, that have still yet to be determined at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you always have to look at the facts of the case, right? And, you know, we have the problem I see with racial narratives and making broadening and sweeping racial narratives is that you are trying to assign is that you are unfairly lumping innocent people into the crimes of guilty people, you know?
Right.
Were there whites who enslaved Blacks? Of course there were. But the majority of whites in this country never enslaved a single Black person in this country. Now, are there racist Asian grandmas towards Black people? Of course there are. But are there racist Black grandmas against Asian people? Of course there are, you know, and, you know, you don't have to look too far in Los Angeles in 1992 during the riots to see the rapper Ice Cube preach about Asian Korean immigrants invading his neighborhood, you know, and saying that the businessmen owning the shops in the neighborhood were trying to turn his neighborhood into Black Korea, you know. So, you know what? All of this is bad, but you trying to lump in the innocent with the guilty does no one any services.
Yeah, it never does. And unfortunately, I don't see a solution for it. Simply because the media, it doesn't benefit anyone in the media to push another narrative. And the more and more you keep hearing it, the more and more you're going to hate one side or the other just because, right? Let me ask you this. When COVID started, and they said that there was an uptick in Asian violence, was that true or false? Because I'm sure you're following that pretty closely as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's an uptick in Asian violence, of course. But there was an uptick against violence of every racial group after COVID. I mean, there was an uptick in Black-on-Black violence, too. There was an uptick on you know, in anti-Asian violence as well. So I don't think this is a uniquely Asian thing.
Kenny, I hate to interrupt you here. You've been on some podcasts, though. You know we got some sponsors who pay for the show to be on the air. First and foremost is GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. 30% off everything in the entire store right now. And we got that new cooling topper that goes on top of the mattress in the hot, hot sun. Is there anything better than a nice cooling topper? Probably not. Probably not in this life. GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros offers a variety of cooling products. Mattresses. They get the cooling mattresses, pillows, and don't forget about their amazing sheets. And the adjustable base is the greatest thing of all time. Once you get that, you're hooked and all in on that. Go to GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros today. And hop on all these deals. Right now you're getting two free cooling pillows with the mattress. That's another one in there. There's a bunch of deals on there. And as always, they get a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there as long as you have decent credits. And it's got a running calculator to tell you what you're paying month by month. Now is the time to get a new mattress set, especially if you run hot like me and you sweat a lot. Go to GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros today. I can assure you this is the finest mattress I have ever owned, and it is literally in every single room of my house. The best fucking reviews you can get on there, by the way, because they're from the listeners. It's you guys. So all the reviews when you go to GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros are all listeners. So you all know each other. A lot of you know each other. Go on there and check out the reviews and be like, all right, sweet. Then call whoever. Call Willie. Call two-leg Willie and say, hey, how was that mattress? It was great? Great. I'll buy one. Next up, we got boxofawesome.com. I have had this for 2 years, and I will never cancel this. Never, ever. Boxofawesome.com is like getting a little tiny box worth of Super Bowl in your mailbox once a month. It's the best. It's bespoke posts, so you know it's like the nicest shit on the planet. It's amazing. The summer bespoke post is here, so you can take all your adventures to a new level. They got a whole new lineup of products there as well. What they do, bespoke posts, is they partner with a bunch of small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every single month, no matter what you're into. Box of Awesome has you covered, from travel and outdoor gear to breezy summer styles and grooming goods. Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. Dude, again, I've gotten a hatchet. I've gotten a whiskey decanter there. I've gotten a dop kit. I've gotten travel bags. I got a Mexican fajita set, which was amazing. It's just cool shit that you would never buy for yourself as a dude. It's free to sign up. You can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box only costs $45, but it's got a way, way, way more worth of stuff in there. So get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com. Enter the promo code DrinkingBros at checkout. That is boxofawesome.com. Promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first box. Huge fan of boxofawesome.com. Again, promo code Drinking Bros. Gets you 20% off there. Last but not least is cardomax.com. CARDOMAX.com. Tasty, tiny little pouch of liquid energy. You can rip it open and squeeze it into any liquid available and come to life. Come back to life. God damn it. Go to cardomax.com today. The BOGO deal is over. Don't think you're getting a BOGO deal because you're not. That deal is all done. However, they're giving you 30% off. Promo code DB will get you 30% off at cardomax.com. Look, this is the former head of Strikeforce Energy, Sean Mattson. He is now rocking this ship there, dude. Cardomax, CARDOMAX.com is where you're going to get your fucking liquid energy intensifier. It goes into any liquid. Rip it open. Grip it and rip it. Pop it in there. Go to cardomax.com. 30% off with the promo code DB. Highly recommends the pink lemonade or the blue raspberry. Choose your battles. Gun to head. I'm going to go blue raspberry. At cardomax.com. CARDOMAX.com. Promo code DB gets you 30% off. Thank you, Kenny. Yeah, I don't either. Again, it's interesting to have you on the show when you're just like, holy shit. Because you would expect it the other way, where you're like, no, there's no way. There's got to be, right? And it's like, no, right. If you look at the stats and you look at the statistics amongst all races, yeah, you can say that crime is up. What determines a hate crime versus something else is also pretty shocking to me, because I saw some of those cams in New York City where Asians were getting attacked. But the people were fully wearing, you know, masks and everything else. They hadn't caught them yet. And they were like, well, that's an Asian hate crime. How do we know who was underneath there?
I guess so.
you know what I'm saying?
It's like, funny. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned New York City. It's a city that I spent a lot of time in for my book, An Inconvenient Minority. It's a beautiful city in many ways because it has so much diversity, but you still need to understand that in New York City, there's still a lot of racial simmering tensions. You know, there are district council members like Lori Cumbo from Brooklyn who was trying to protest the Asians in basically what she called coming in a wave of Asians coming in and setting up shop in her neighborhood. You know, there's still tribalism there. There's still tribalism. And it's in a way, like, is it all bad that you want to hang out with people in your own community and people who share your values? I don't think it's all bad that you want to hang out with people to share your values, but I think it becomes bad when you start to attack other people for trying to come in into your neighborhoods and schools and start to preach violence against them.
Yeah. And, you know, I grew up, most of my life was in Georgia. And then I went to Columbus, Ohio for a while for college there. And then I went to New York, lived there a few different times. Then I lived in Los Angeles for about 18 years. There's a Koreatown or a Chinatown in all of these major cities. And, I don't see that much I don't see many problems with it from people that live in the community. Shit, you drive through L.A., I mean, there's a sign that straight up just a sign that just says Koreatown, welcome to Koreatown in there. And it seems like the culture and everything else is celebrated. I don't know. Maybe it's me and maybe I'm just white and dumb and blind to it, but I haven't seen that many problems in New York City and in L.A. You read about it, obviously. Some people in the chat here are commenting on the rooftop Koreans from the Rodney King riots, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but what else are you supposed to do at that point? In today's society, I just don't see it that much. Nor do a lot of people care. The only time I ever see about it or read about it is in the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is, look, the vast majority of Americans just want to live and let live. You know, the vast majority of Americans don't care what your skin color is. If you're friendly, if you get along, they like you. If you don't get along, they don't like you. You know, we're not asking for a society. We're not asking for a society in which everybody gets along. That's impossible. We're asking for a society in which people can just, in which people can just associate with who they want to associate with and not be accused of harboring suspect racial prejudice just because they associate with people the way that they want to associate with, you know? My group, Colorist United, I'm president of Colorist United. We advocate for a race-blind America. And what we've found is that if you go to our website and you take a look at our petition and the thousands of people who've signed it, many of these people are simply just frustrated with the way that the term racism is being used as like a political cudgel to get people to feel guilty about themselves, innocent people who are not racist, to get people to do things. And fortunately, that's what organizations like Black Lives Matter is doing, and in many cases, the Stop Asian Hate movement is doing. So you have to be careful, right? We need to talk about violence, yes, but we need to avoid fixating on race as the sole cause for these kinds of things.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Unfortunately, that does not sell news. And that's
right.
Doesn't help the CNNs, doesn't help the Foxes, it doesn't help any of it. What does is racism, a race war. People have been pitching that in the press for a long time. Yeah, we want a fucking race war, dude. Let's start a race war. It's why? When we travel a lot for the show, pre-COVID, we would go somewhere every 2 to 3 weeks. I've been to every city you could possibly imagine, I feel like, in the country.
Wow.
I just don't see it, man. I just don't see the racism. And like, I mean, shit, I've been broken down in some fucking terrible neighborhoods, and like, Black people have been nothing but great to me. Asian people have been nothing but great everywhere we go. And they don't even know us, you know? I can't even pass it off as that. I'm not that fucking famous, for Christ's sakes. And it's like, I just don't see that many problems or issues between people. I think it has all been exacerbated by the media. And they want us to hate each other for some reason, and I don't get it. And with the school thing that you're talking about, the problems in the school system, that is only going to persist. We were chatting a little bit about some before we went on the air about critical race theory and the potential of that being taught in our school system, which I think would be unbelievably harmful. But we also were chatting about the fact that I don't even know if anybody really knows what it is. What's your stance on teaching critical race theory in the school system? I have a feeling it's probably not going to happen. You're just like, I don't want that. I don't want that.
It depends. So it's actually have a little bit more of a nuanced position. So it's very disingenuous to say that critical race theory is just about teaching racism or just about teaching slavery. No, it's not. We already teach slavery. We already teach about racism. All of that should be taught. But critical race theory is really about assigning certain characteristics to races, to certain races. So whites are privileged, and then putting other races into an oppressed category. Blacks are oppressed. And the purpose of making this dichotomy, by the way, the purpose of making this dichotomy is to enhance the racial grievance. It's to actually is to exacerbate it. And it's to actually make the races distrust each other. And that's something that I can't handle. That's something that I do not believe is right, that you should not teach in the public school system. It's to say that Black in America or Black Americans are universally oppressed. You know, I think that a rich Black person is definitely not as oppressed as a poor Asian person or a poor white person, you know? And all of this really does is it makes the locus of grievance. It turns it from class-based things into race-based things. And the only benefit that it gives are the elite people who sort of propagate this ideology. So I don't see a reason why you would teach it. I see it only as stirring division and hate. And then this is why I'm opposed to it.
Yeah, and is there even a curriculum for it? Is there textbooks? Is there, you know, or is it just floating out into the ether of like, hey, we want this critical race theory. Now, what's actually in there, we don't really know. Because to my knowledge, there is no textbooks or anything out about it yet. Is that what they're fighting for, I guess?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example of something that is taught in critical race theory. So there's this essay called Whiteness as Property. And basically, it talks about it talks about white passing people or white passing black people. And they say that white passing black people have more privilege than black passing black people. So basically, like, lighter skinned black people have more privilege than like darker skinned black people because they're more able to assimilate or acclimate to white culture than darker skinned black people. And they give, you know, some examples about this and everything like that. I'm not denying historically that's the case, but nowadays to be a white passing black person now, maybe you're able to blend in a little more with white Americans, but you're also actually causing more distrust between you and other black Americans now, because now when you heighten this sort of colorism, now other darker skinned black Americans are looking at you with suspicion. So is the objective of this essay to create a colorblind society, to create a colorblind America, or just to enhance racial division and enhance people looking and judging people on the basis of background?
Yeah, and again, that's what it feels like. With what you're describing, did you get a hold of something that said, hey, this is what they're a curriculum that they are going to teach in schools?
So what I've gotten a hold of is what I've gotten a hold of are budget proposals for various ethnic studies, for various ethnic studies or equity-based instruction curricula, you know. And so some of them directly say, yeah, we're going to implement critical race theory. We're going to teach critical race theory to our kids. Those are the obvious ones. But then there's some that kind of couch it in other kind of language. Like, we're going to teach one of them says, like, we're going to teach kids to reflect on themselves in a critical manner through the lens of race and everything like that. And I think more people have done better work than me, including Chris Rufo and James Lindsay. Other intellectuals have done better work than me, specifically on the critical race theory in schools front. But I have gotten my hands, and I have seen some of those curricula.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because then that's going to change another segment of jobs for teachers. Because then who's going to teach it? White people couldn't teach critical race theory, one would imagine, right?
Right. And this is sort of the direction that people are moving in the educational studies department. Now they're saying only black teachers can teach black students. That's what they're saying. You know, and it's funny that they say that, because to me, that's so insulting to all of the white teachers who, you know, who oftentimes, because of their own selflessness, move into poor, low income neighborhoods, you know, and to teach with their heart, you know, minority children. Like, that takes a lot of courage to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so by saying now only black people should teach black students, you're actually disincentivizing the moral courage that it requires to actually be able to go into these communities and serve them in a loving way.
Yeah, not only that, but the pay sucks. If you're a teacher, the pay is already shitty. You don't get enough money for that difficult of a job as is. A lot of them have to pay for their own school supplies and everything else. So to couple that of like, hey, congratulations, you probably just went $150,000 into debt to be able to teach, you know, to get the college degree and be able to teach. Now you're not going to be good enough for that job because your race is going to be incorrect for what we want to teach. It's gonna make a lot of people think or stop wanting to become a teacher in this world. I've said the same thing right. about police officers as well.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Dude, if you're a police officer, why would you do that? Why? We have a cop show on our network, Failure to Stop, and both of those guys are retired. It's one of those things where it's just like, man, I don't know what's the incentive to become a police officer or a teacher these days, going through all the bullshit you have to go through on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, think about it. I mean, if we're trying to create a society where we've lost respect for police officers, okay, imagine if they actually quit. Mm-hmm. Okay, who's policing your community now? You know, and okay, what studies have unequivocally shown over and over again is when you remove police from an underprivileged area, crime spikes. It just really does. So it's kind of like, okay, you can live in a place with police or you can live in a place without police, but you'll have to bear the consequences.
Yeah, and those consequences aren't going to be fun because a lot of people are turning in their badges. And look, crime rate is up in all these other cities and everything else. What was the most interesting thing that you uncovered when you were doing research for your book?
I think the it's always interesting for me to see how people judge people. Judgment to me is a primary issue for me. And so you see the way that Harvard judges people, right? And they judge people in academics, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, extracurriculars, obviously, and then personality. You know, and the way they view personality is like likability, leadership, you know, social smarts, friendliness, that kind of thing. But just seeing that weaponized against Asian Americans, just because they're the wrong race, to me is saddening. That was very disheartening to see. It kind of shows that we as Harvard and the elites have just as long of a way to go as the rest of us do in terms of truly creating a race blind America.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about this a lot too, is that we've become a creator economy in the U.S. I don't know that the Harvards of the world will be necessary for the next generation to succeed, because a lot of people are making a lot of money off of creating their own jobs and content and everything else. Where do you see it going as far as Ivy League schools and all that for the future?
Okay, so the main purpose of the Ivy Leagues now is as a networking platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anymore primarily about the instruction, except in if you are ultra good at math or ultra good at science. So Harvard has not even primarily become about academics anymore. It has primarily become about networking. And as a result, you know, its legacy population is increased. It's basically people whose parents have gone to Harvard now make up over a third of the school, you know? And so if you want to make a country club, that's fine. Go ahead and make a country club for you and your friends to mingle with other rich friends and then maybe throw in the diversity guy once in a while to show that you're morally virtuous, everything like that. If you want to make the country club, fine, but why does it have to be a nonprofit institution that gets all of these tax deductions, that gets $500 million a year in government money, that has an endowment of $40 billion? You know, what is the true social value of making something like that? And I think that Harvard and all of the colleges in the university system in our country are going to have to undergo a reckoning on that. You know, are you truly fostering your mission? Are you truly increasing excellence? Are you truly producing the best qualified people, focusing on your missions, your academics, or are you getting distracted and by all of these various things in our culture?
Yeah, and regarding the Ivy Leagues, Sitch.
Yeah.
If they need you for something, they are willing to bend the rules. I remember I'd gotten a bunch of football scholarships out of high school, and one of them was to an Ivy League school. I had the GPA. I was terrible at standardized tests. I mean, horrific at it. Like I'm that dude who took the Princeton Review Board classes. You know, like after school, and they were like, "Look, my SATs were so shitty that they were like, look, if we don't improve your score by 50 points, we'll give you, you know, $100 back or 200 back or whatever it was." Guess who got that money back, dude? I got that money back. I was terrible at it. Well, then I had to go and report it to that school that was recruiting me, the Ivy League school that was recruiting me. And the coach goes, or, you know, whoever was in charge of recruiting goes, "Hey, dude, why don't you take the ACTs? Those are a little easier. And if you get this one number, we'll just forget about the SATs and we can just chuck that. Like, no big deal, you know?" I mean, and they literally said it to me. And I was like, "All right, cool, man." So I took the ACTs. Did a little better, but not much, like not good enough. And homeboy was just like, "Look, God damn, we'd love to have you, man. That score's the worst. It would be the worst at the entire school." But then a friend of mine who was a couple years younger, he actually went to Harvard, got in. Okay. Same thing. Football. So
okay, for football, yeah.
He was not the smartest guy, and they needed him. He went there, was great for their team, great on the team, but he didn't have the grades to get in there, not at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, athletics is kind of a different story for me, because like you have to show genuine merit to be recruited. I mean, athletically, you have to show genuine merit to be recruited into a school, into a good school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is an academic merit. Now, what I don't want that kid to do is I don't want that kid that got recruited into Harvard to eventually, you know, have to compromise on his academics because the academics that he wanted to take was too hard for him. And then eventually, you know, fail or drop out of school or struggle in school, that which distracts from his athletic activities and everything like that. But what happens at Harvard is that if you recruit somebody on the basis of race who is less qualified, you know, who is significantly less qualified, especially if you recruit them into a STEM major or a law school or something that requires high intellectual cognitive ability, those people tend to graduate at the bottom of their class and they get quite discouraged. And a lot of them actually leave those majors. So you're going from a math major and you're going back into like sociology or ethnic studies or something like that, or some less useful major market-wise. And so at that point, is the college helping you by putting you into a place in the bottom 25%, or is it hurting you? You know, and that's unfortunately what a lot of the people who are admitted because of affirmative action have to face at these top universities. And it's unfair to them. Like, it really is. It really is unfair to them.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to bring up, because I never thought of that. In the case of my friend, he ended up figuring it out, did really well. You know, he said the first year was really, really difficult because the academics mm-hmm. were so much higher than he was accustomed to. Figured it out and went on to become a great human being. And obviously, if you're going to Harvard, you're not going to the NFL. So he knew that. He just wanted to get a great education. It's, you know, obviously have the connections that Harvard brought with it, and he got through it. But yeah, shit, I never thought of it from that. Yeah, if you are taking somebody just because of affirmative action or something along those lines to get in, once you are in there, God, that would be brutal. That caseload. I mean, just going through all of those courses, man. I had a hard time at Ohio State, and that's nowhere near an Harvard, like a Harvard. Yeah.
Well, the thing is now Harvard is able to sort of smooth that over by simply making their courses less rigorous. You know, the average grade at Harvard is an A- now. It's the average final grade per class.
Is it really?
So it's So you can the courses at Harvard aren't even that strong anymore. So I mean, this is the cost when you have to admit a whole group of people who are less qualified because of affirmative action or whatever, because of legacy or whatever, you have to dumb down the courses to meet them at where they're at, you know, in order so you can keep your graduation rate up, so you can lower your dropout rate, everything like that. So the whole system affected by this becomes more corrupted because of these of the whole system, and it just, that's how it manifests itself. So you have basically, what you have is this picture, is this picture of Harvard, an institution that is clinging on to the laurels that it once earned based on merit, that is now doling out various incentive after incentive that is not merit based to populations, that's compromising its merit, and then having to paper over that with things like grade inflation, with things like letting people switch out of majors or switch to less rigorous majors. And that's what's happening at this school. This is it's a corroding institution from its previous preeminent place in excellence.
Yeah, and I know my problem when I first got there to, a lesser than school than Harvard, if you will, was simply how many courses you had to take that were outside of, the tradition of what you learned growing up. Different forms of art history and things like that, where I was like, oh man, we did not learn any of that in Georgia. So just getting used to that and then kind of dialing that in there. With Davidson,
yeah,
was that your dream school to go to? Why did you end up there?
No, it wasn't my dream school. It was a school where I got the best. Don't get me wrong. I wanted a liberal arts education. So it was the best school that I had. That got me through. I didn't really have a dream school, After Princeton, I applied to Princeton, didn't get into Princeton. After that, I didn't apply to 8 Ivy League schools. I liked Princeton because it was sort of near to my family, and it had that elite reputation. I mean, I was a high school; I was sort of sucked into that, just like anybody else. But then after that, my next choice was Wheaton College, because it was a Christian school, in Chicago. But then you get a little money from Davidson, and I took the tour and everything like that. And I liked it, and I generally had a good experience there, although it's definitely descended down into leftism, unfortunately. So that kind of clouded my memory a little bit there, but overall I had a good experience. I really did.
And then in today, in the real world, what is your job besides being an author and everything else? What do you do in real life?
I'm president of Colorists United.
Gotcha.
I was recruited to be president of Colorists United because people saw the way I wrote. The board of directors saw my advocacy and saw kind of the passion with which I wrote this book and attacked Harvard for obviously unjust things that it's doing to populations. And so I became president of Colorists United, and really my job out there is to really advocate on behalf of these millions of Americans who really want a race-blind society, who know America isn't racist, but who have just been fed these ideologies and are now facing, suppression for their employer for having a dissenting opinion on various things, are now facing sort of equity protocols that prefer certain races over others. We have to have somebody to speak up for them. And so that's what I'm doing with Colorists United.
You realize what an uphill battle that is, though, right? I'm sure when you go to all these cities and everything else, you're just like, holy, are there days where you just throw your hands up and you're like, man, I don't know if we'll ever be united?
There are days that I wake up and I feel like I don't know if I could make a difference, but there are days when I wake up and I really see that the majority of Americans are behind me, and insofar as that's true, I'm going to keep chugging.
Nice. And how many people are working at that organization at Colorists United right now?
We're a very small organization right now, but we have big tentacles. We have three, full-time employees, and a really strong board. And, our next major initiative, we're actually tackling the Salvation Army. They just released a new curricula where they said we need people to repent for their racism. And, of course, they're not racist, so they shouldn't need to repent for something they didn't do. And so we are pretty much on the front lines gathering petitions and signatures and going up to the leadership and saying, hey, this is something you need to recant, because this is not something that represents the best of who you guys are.
So let me ask you, in a case like Coca-Cola, with that just happening, do you guys head down there and try to chat with some of the people who were inside that meetings where they wanted you to be less white and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm the person who broke that story, you know, I've been in contact with, and it's about picking and choosing the right institutions, right? I mean, there are some institutions that have gone so far off the deep end that you can't save them. And then there's some institutions that can be saved. So we're not going to fight every battle, but if your listeners, your viewers are interested in having Colorist United come and speak to you guys about something that you're facing, you know, but you feel like you can't speak up for one reason or another, no problem. Just let us know on our website, colorsunited.org, and we will respond and read your email.
Awesome. Awesome. Now's the point in the show where we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
C.S. Lewis.
Really?
Yeah.
Big C.S. Yeah, Lewis fan, huh?
I know. He's such a bro, right? he's not exactly a bro, but he is for me, like, his intellectual discoveries, his defense of Christianity, his amazing writing, just, I think, speaks to a spiritual heart of this nation that I think everybody needs to read. And what, you know, it's funny what he said. There's this interesting passage that came from one of his books where he's sort of debating about, like, well, you know, the person who has a lot of money can do more virtuous things than a person who has, like, no money. And then he made this really just this observation that just struck me forever. And he said, well, God doesn't judge you on the outcome of your actions or whether you're impacting the most people or anything else. But he knows that at every point in your life, no matter where you are, you have a choice. And you can make the choice upward, or you can make the choice downward. And he will respect you if you make that choice upward, regardless of whatever position that you're in. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to use whatever voice, whatever platform that I have to sort of lift the discussion a little bit and help to heal this country.
Awesome. Well, hey, I appreciate your time and being on the show today. Once again, the book is called An Inconvenient Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence and the Fight for Meritocracy. It is available now. The hardback is out. The Kindle's back. You doing an audiobook of this?
Audiobooks is coming out soon.
Yeah, they usually release it a little bit afterwards. Are you reading it yourself?
Of course.
Yeah. You got to. That's mandatory these days. That's what I always tell everybody. You got to read your own audiobook.
Oh, wait. No. I thought you said, have I read my own book?
No. Are you reading your audiobook?
Am I reading my audiobook? No. We have a professional.
Ah, you fucker. You got to, you should do it yourself. What people want to hear from you.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a lot of reading. Okay. It's like, that's a lot.
It is. Look, those sessions are 7-8 days, but look, I consider doing it. That's all I'm going to say. I'll leave it up to you. But again, thank you for being here today, Kenny. We greatly appreciate it. Kids, hop on over to Drinking Bros Sports. We got the Monday morning recap show coming up here in about 30 minutes with the rest of the crew. Guess what? I'm Ross Patterson today. Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Z-
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.